Remember me. Disc 4.
Okay. So the reason I couldn't find my clothes is they're not in a wardrobe. They're in a whole other room, behind a concealed door which looks like a mirror. And the reason they need a whole other room is because there's so bloody many of them! As I stare at the racks, I feel faint. I've never seen so many clothes, not outside a shop. Crisp white shirts, tailored black trousers, suits in shades of mushroom and taupe, chiffony evening wear, tights rolled up in their own special drawer, folded silky knickers with La Perla labels. I can't see anything that doesn't look brand new and immaculate. There are no baggy jeans, no sloppy jumpers, no comfy old PJs. I leaf through a row of jackets, all pretty much identical apart from the buttons. I can't believe I've spent so much money on clothes, and they're all versions of beige. What do you think? Rosalie is watching me, her eyes sparkling. Amazing. Anne has a great eye. She nods sagely. Anne, your personal shopper.
I have a personal shopper?
Just for the main pieces each season. Rosalie pulls out a dark blue dress with spaghetti straps and the tiniest ruffle round the hem. Look, this is the dress you wore when we first met. I remember thinking, ah, this is the girl Eric's smitten with. It was the talk of the party. And let me tell you, Lexi, there were a lot of disappointed girls out there when you two got married. She reaches for a long black evening dress. This is the dress you wore to my murder mystery evening. She holds it up against me, with a little fur swag and pearls. Don't you remember?
Not really.
What about this Catherine Walker? You must remember that. Or your Roland Moray?
Rosalie is whipping out dress after dress, none of which looks remotely familiar. She reaches a pale garment carrier and stops with a gasp.
Your wedding dress!
Slowly, reverently, she unzips the garment carrier and pulls out the silky white sheath I recognise from the DVD.
Doesn't that bring it all back?
I stare at the dress, trying as hard as I can to will my memory to return, but nothing.
Oh, my God!
Rosalie suddenly claps her hand over her mouth.
You and Eric should have a renewal of vows. I'll plan it for you. We could have a Japanese theme, you could wear a kimono.
Maybe. I cut her off. It's early days. I'll think about it. Rosalie looks disappointed as she packs the wedding dress away. Then her face lights up.
Try the shoes. You have to remember your shoes.
She heads to the other side of the room and flings open a cupboard door. And I stare in disbelief. I've never seen so many shoes. All in neat rows, most of them high-heeled. What am I doing with high-heeled shoes? This is unbelievable. I turn to Rosalie. I can't even walk in heels. God knows why I've bought them.
Yes, you can. Rosalie looks puzzled. Of course you can.
No, I shake my head. I have never been able to do heels. I fall over. I twist my ankle. I look stupid.
Sweetie,
Rosalie's eyes are wide.
You live in heels. You were wearing these last time we had lunch.
She pulls out a pair of black pumps with 4-inch skinny stiletto heels, the kind I'd never even look at in a shop. The soles are scuffed. The inside label has been rubbed away. Someone's been wearing these.
Me?
Put them on, says Rosalie.
Cautiously, I slip off my loafers and step into the pointy heels. Almost at once, I topple over and grab on to Rosalie. You see, I can't balance.
Lexi, you can't walk in these.
says Rosalie firmly. I've seen you do it.
I can't. I make to take them off, but Rosalie grabs my arm.
No, don't give up, sweetie. It's in you. I know it is. You have to unlock it.
I try another step, but my ankle bends like plasticine.
It's no good, I exhale in frustration. I wasn't meant to do this. Yes, you were. Try again. Find the zone.
Rosalie sounds like she's coaching me for the Olympics.
You can do it, Lexi.
I totter to the other side of the room and cling onto the curtain. I'll never crack this, I say despairingly.
Of course you will. Just don't think about it. Distract yourself. I know. We'll sing a song. Land of hope and glory. Come on, Lexi, sing.
Reluctantly, I join in. I really hope Eric doesn't have a CCTV camera trained on us at this moment.
Now walk.
Rosalie gives me a little push.
Go.
Land of hope and glory. Trying to keep my mind focused on the song, I take a step forward, then another, then another. Oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm walking in high heels.
You see? Crows Rosalie in triumph. I told you, you are a heels girl.
I get to the other side of the room, swivel round confidently and walk back, an elated grin on my face. I feel like a model. I can do it. It's easy.
Yeah.
Rosalie lifts her hand and high-fives me. She opens a drawer, scoops up some gym clothes and pops them into an oversized tote.
Come on, let's go.
We drive to the gym in Rosalie's car. It's a sumptuous Range Rover with an ROS1 number plate and designer carrier bags strewn all over the back seat. So, what do you do? I say as she winds her way between two lanes of traffic.
I do a lot of voluntary work.
She nods earnestly. Wow. I feel a bit shamefaced. Rosalie didn't strike me as the voluntary work type, which just shows how prejudiced I am.
What kind? Event planning, mainly.
For a particular charity?
No, mostly for friends. You know, if they need a helping hand with the flowers or party favours or whatever.
Rosalie's smiling winsomely up at a truck driver.
Please let me in, Mr. Lorry driver. Thank you.
She pulls over into the next lane and blows him a kiss.
I do the odd bits for the company too, she adds. Eric's such a sweetie. He always gets me involved in launches, that kind of thing. Oh, shit. Roadworks.
She pulls out to a cacophony of angry hooting and turns the radio up higher. So you like Eric? I try to sound casual, although I'm dying to hear what she thinks of him.
Oh, he's the perfect husband. Absolutely perfect.
She draws up at a zebra crossing.
Mine's a monster.
Really? I stare at her.
Mind you, I'm a monster too.
She turns to face me, her blue eyes deadly serious.
We're so volatile. It's a total love-hate relationship. Here we are.
She zooms off again and drives into a tiny car park, pulls up next to a Porsche and turns off the engine.
Now, don't worry,
she says as she ushers me towards the glass double doors.
I know this will be really hard for you, so I'll do all the talking. Hi there!
She pushes her way into a smart reception area furnished with tan leather seating and a pebble water feature.
Hi, ladies!
The receptionist's face falls as she sees me.
Lexi, you poor thing. We heard about the accident. Are you all right?
I'm fine, thanks. I venture a smile. Thanks very much for the flowers.
Poor Lexi has amnesia, says Rosalie impressively. She doesn't remember this place. She doesn't remember anything.
She casts around as though for a way to illustrate.
Like, she doesn't remember this door or this plant.
She gestures to a large frondy fern.
Goodness!
I know.
Rosalie is nodding solemnly.
It's a nightmare for her.
She turns to me.
Is this bringing back any memories, Lexi?
Not really. Everyone in the reception area is staring at me agog. I feel like a member of the Amnesia Freak Circus.
Come on!
Rosalie takes hold of my arm firmly.
We'll get changed. You might remember once you're in your exercise clothes.
The changing rooms are the most palatial ones I've ever seen, all smooth wood and mosaic showers and gentle music playing over the speakers. I disappear into a cubicle and pull on a pair of leggings. Then I pull on the leotard bit. It's got a thong, I realise to my horror.
My bum will look massive. I can't wear this.
But I don't have anything else. Reluctantly, I pull it on, then edge out of the cubicle, hands over my eyes. This could be really, really gross. I count to five, then force myself to take a peek. Actually, I don't look too bad. I remove my hands completely and stare at myself. I look all long and lean and different. Experimentally, I flex my arm, and a biceps muscle I've never seen before pops up. I stare at it in astonishment.
So?
Rosalie bustles up to me, dressed in leggings and a crop top.
This way!
She ushers me into a large, airy exercise studio where rows of well-groomed women are already in position on yoga mats.
Sorry we're late,
she says momentously, looking around the room.
But Lexi has got amnesia. She doesn't remember anything about any of you.
I get the feeling Rosalie is enjoying this. Hi. I do a shy wave around the room.
I heard about your accident, Lexi.
The exercise teacher is coming over with a sympathetic smile. She's a slim woman with cropped blonde hair and a headset.
Please take it easy today. Sit out whenever you like. We're starting with some mat work.
Okay, thanks.
We're trying to trigger her memory, Rosalie chimes in. So everyone just act normal.
As all the others raise their arms, I nervously take a mat and sit down. Gym has never exactly been my strong point. I guess I'll just follow as best I can. I stretch my legs out in front of me and reach for my toes, although there's no way I'll ever be able to... Bloody hell! I can touch my toes. In fact, I can put my head right down on my knees. What's happened to me? In disbelief, I follow the next manoeuvre. And I can do that one too. I'm bendy. My body is moving into each position as if it can remember everything perfectly, even if I can't.
And now for those who are up to it,
the teacher is saying,
the advanced dancer position.
Cautiously, I start tugging on my ankle.
And it obeys me. I'm pulling my leg right above my head. I feel like yelling, look at me, everyone.
Don't overdo it, Lexi.
The teacher looks alarmed.
Maybe take it easy now. I'd leave out the splits this week.
No way. I can do the splits.
Afterwards, in the changing room, I'm exhilarated. I sit in front of the mirror, drying my hair, watching as it turns from damp mouse back to shiny, glowing chestnut.
I can't get over it,
I keep saying to Rosalie. I was always so crap at exercise.
Sweetie, you're a natural.
Rosalie is slathering body lotion all over herself.
You're the best in the class.
I switch off the hairdryer, pull my hands through my dry hair, and survey my reflection. For the millionth time, my gaze is drawn to my gleaming white teeth and my full pink lips. My mouth never looked like that in 2004. I know it didn't. Rosalie, I lower my voice. Can I ask you a personal question?
Of course, Rosalie whispers back.
Did I ever have anything done to my face, like Botox or...
I lower my voice still further, hardly able to believe I'm saying this.
Surgery. Sweetie!
Rosalie looks appalled. Shh! She puts her finger to her lips. But shh!
Of course we haven't had anything done. All totally 100% natural.
She winks. What does that wink mean? Rosalie, you have to tell me what I've had done. I trail off suddenly, distracted by my reflection in the mirror. Without noticing what I've been doing, I've been taking hairpins from the pot in front of me and putting my hair up on autopilot. In about 30 seconds, I've constructed the most perfect chignon.
How the fuck did I do that?
As I survey my own hands, I can feel slight hysteria rising inside me. What else can I do? Defuse a bomb? Assassinate someone with one blow of my hand?
What is it?
Rosalie catches my gaze.
I just put my hair up.
I gesture at the mirror.
Look, it's incredible. I've never done that before in my life.
Yes, you have.
She looks puzzled.
You wear it like that for work every day.
But I don't remember. It's like Superwoman's taken over my body or something. I can walk in heels. I can put my hair up. I can do the splits. I'm like this Uber woman. It's not me.
Sweetie, it is you.
Rosalie squeezes my arm.
You better get used to it.
We have lunch in the juice bar and chat to a couple of girls who seem to know me, and then Rosalie drives me home. As we travel up in the lift, I'm suddenly exhausted.
So, says Rosalie as we enter the apartment, do you want to have another look at your clothes? Maybe swimwear?
Actually, I feel pretty wiped out, I say apologetically. Do you mind if I go and have a rest?
Of course not,
she pats my arm.
I'll wait out here for you. Make sure you're okay.
Don't be silly. I smile. I'll be fine until Eric comes home, really, and... Thanks, Rosalie. You've been so kind.
Darling girl.
She gives me a hug and picks up her bag.
I'll give you a call. Look after yourself.
She's halfway out of the door when something occurs to me.
Rosalie,
I call.
What should I make Eric for dinner tonight?
She turns and gazes at me uncomprehendingly. I suppose it is quite a strange question, out of the blue. I just thought you might know what sort of thing he likes. I laugh awkwardly.
Sweetie?
Rosalie blinks several times.
Sweetie, you don't make the dinner. Jana makes the dinner. Your housekeeper? She'll be out shopping right now. Then she'll come back, make dinner, turn down your bed.
Right, of course. I nod, hastily trying to look like I knew that all along. But bloody hell, this really is a different life. I've never even had a cleaner before, let alone a 5-star hotel-type housekeeper. Well, I guess I'll go to bed then. I say, bye. Rosalie blows me a kiss and closes the door behind her, and I head into the bedroom, which is all cream and luxurious dark wood, with a massive suede-upholstered bed. Eric has insisted I take the main bedroom, which is very kind and noble of him. Mind you, the spare room is pretty sumptuous too. In fact, I think he gets his own jacuzzi, so he can't complain. I kick off my heels, climb underneath the duvet, and feel myself instantly relax. This is the most comfortable bed I have ever been in, ever. I wriggle around a bit, luxuriating in the smooth sheets and perfect squashy pillows. That's good. I'll just close my eyes and have a tiny kip. I wake to a dim light and the sound of chinking crockery.
Darling, comes a voice from outside the door. Are you awake?
Oh, I struggle to a sitting position and rub my eyes. Hi.
The door opens and in comes Eric, holding a tray and a carrier bag.
You've been asleep for hours. I've brought you some supper.
He heads towards the bed, puts the tray down and switches on the bedside light.
It's Thai chicken soup.
I love Thai chicken soup, I say in delight. Thanks.
Eric smiles and hands me a spoon.
Rosalie told me you two girls went to the gym today.
Yes, it was great.
I take a spoonful of soup and it's absolutely delicious. God, I'm ravenous.
Eric, you couldn't get me a piece of bread, could you?
I raise my head. Just to mop this up?
Bread?
Eric frowns, looking puzzled.
Darling, we don't keep bread in the house. We're both low carb.
Oh, right. I'd forgotten about the low carb thing.
No problem. I smile at him and take another mouthful of soup. I can be low carb. Easy.
Which brings me to my little gift, says Eric. Or, in fact, two gifts. This is the first one.
He reaches into the carrier bag and produces a laminated ring-bound booklet, which he hands to me with a flourish. The front cover is a colour photograph of me and Eric in our wedding outfits, and the title reads, Eric and Lexi Gardner, Marriage Manual.
You remember the doctor suggested writing down all the details of our life together?
Eric looks proud.
Well, I've compiled this booklet for you. Any question you have about our marriage and life together, the answer should be in there.
I turn the first page, and there's a frontispiece. Eric and Lexi, a better marriage for a better world.
We have a mission statement.
I'm stunned.
I came up with it just now.
Eric shrugs modestly.
What do you think?
It's great.
I flip through the booklet. There are pages of print interspersed with headings, photographs, and even some hand-drawn diagrams. I can see sections on holidays, family, laundry, weekends.
I've organised the entries in alphabetical order, Eric explains, and indexed them. It should be fairly simple to use.
I flip to the index and run my eyes down the page at random. Tomatoes, pages 5 and 23. Tongs, see barbecue. Tongues, page 24.
Tongues?
Immediately I start flipping to page 24.
Don't try and read it now.
Eric gently closes the manual.
You need to eat and sleep.
I'll look up tongues later, when he's gone.
I finish the rest of the soup and lean back with a contented sigh.
Thank you so much, Eric. That was perfect.
It's no trouble, my darling.
Eric removes the tray and puts it on the dressing table. As he does so, he notices my shoes on the floor.
Lexi?
He flashes me a smile.
Shoes go in your dressing room.
Oh, I say, sorry.
No problem. There's a lot to learn.
He comes back over to the bed and reaches into his pocket.
And this is my other gift.
He produces a little jewellery box made of leather. My head starts prickling in disbelief as I gaze at it. My husband is giving me a present in a posh jewellery box, just like grown-up people in movies.
I'd like you to have something you actually remember me giving you,
Eric says with a rueful smile and nods at the box.
Open it.
I prize it open and find a single diamond strung on a gold chain.
Like it?
It's amazing, I stammer. I love it. Thank you so much.
Eric reaches over and strokes my hair.
It's good to have you home, Lexi.
It's good to be home, I reply with fervour.
Which is almost true. I can't honestly say this place feels like home yet,
but it feels like a really swish five-star hotel, which is even better.
I take out the diamond and look at it in awe. Meanwhile, Eric is playing idly with a strand of my hair, a tender expression on his face.
Eric, I say a bit shyly, when we two first met, what did you see in me? Why did you fall in love with me?
A reminiscent smile flickers across his face.
I fell in love with you, Lexi, he says, because you're dynamic. You're efficient, you're hungry for success, like me. People call us hard, but we're not. We're just intensely competitive.
Right, I say after a slight pause. To be honest, I've never thought of myself as that intensely competitive, but then maybe I am in 2007.
And I fell in love with your beautiful mouth.
Eric touches my top lip gently.
And your long legs. And the way you swing your briefcase.
He called me beautiful.
I'm listening entranced. I want him to go on forever. No one has ever spoken to me like this my whole life.
I'll leave you now.
He kisses me on the forehead and picks up the tray.
You sleep well. See you in the morning.
See you then, I murmur. Good night, Eric, and thank you. He closes the door and I'm left alone with my necklace and my marriage manual and my glow of euphoria. I have the dream husband. No, I have the better than a dream husband. He brought me Thai chicken soup and gave me a diamond and fell in love with the way I swing my briefcase. I must have been Gandhi.
8. Flossing, page 19. Food. See also daily meals, kitchen, eating out. Page 20. Foreplay. Page 21. No way! He put in a section on foreplay. I've been flicking through the marriage manual ever since I woke up this morning, and it's totally, utterly riveting. I feel like I'm spying on my own life, not to mention Eric's. I know everything, from where he buys his cufflinks, to what he thinks of the government, to the fact that he checks his scrotum for lumps every month. Which is a bit more than I bargained for. Did he have to mention his scrotum? It's breakfast time, and we're both sitting in the kitchen. Eric's reading the FT, and I'm consulting the index to see what I normally eat. But foreplay looks a whole lot more interesting than food. Surreptitiously, I turn to page 21. Oh my God! He seriously has written three paragraphs on foreplay. Under general routine, sweeping regular motion, normally clockwise direction, gentle stimulation of the inner thighs. I splutter on my coffee and Eric looks up.
All right, darling.
He smiles.
Is the manual helpful? Are you finding everything you need?
Yes. I hastily flick to another section, feeling like a kid looking up rude words in the dictionary. I was just finding out what I usually have for breakfast.
Jana's left some scrambled egg and bacon in the oven, says Eric, and you usually have some green juice.
He gestures at a jug of what looks like sludgy marsh water on the counter.
It's a vitamin drink and natural appetite suppressant.
I suppress a shudder.
I think I'll give that a miss today.
I take some egg and bacon from the oven and try to quell my longing for three slices of granary toast to go with it.
Your new car should be delivered later on.
Eric takes a sip of coffee.
The replacement for the one that was damaged, although I'm guessing you won't want to drive in a hurry.
I hadn't really thought about it, I say helplessly.
Well, we'll see. You can't yet, anyway, until you've retaken your driving test.
He wipes his mouth with a linen napkin and gets up.
There's another thing, Lexi. If you don't mind, I'd like to schedule in a small dinner party for next week. Just a few old friends.
A dinner party? I echo, apprehensive. I've never really been the dinner party throwing type. Unless you count pasta on the sofa in front of Will and Grace a dinner party.
There's nothing to worry about.
He puts his hands gently on my shoulders.
Jana will do the catering. All you have to do is look wonderful. But if you're not up to it, we can forget the idea.
Of course I'm up to it, I say quickly. I'm tired of everyone treating me like I'm an invalid. I feel great.
Well, in which case, that brings me to another subject. Work.
Eric is shrugging on his jacket.
Obviously, you're not up to returning full-time just yet. But Simon was wondering if you'd like to go into the office for a visit. Simon Johnson?
He clarifies.
Do you remember him?
Simon Johnson, the managing director.
Uh-huh. Eric nods. He called here last night. We had a good chat. Nice guy.
I didn't think he'd even heard of me, I say in disbelief.
Lexi, you're an important member of the senior management team, says Eric patiently. Of course he's heard of you.
Oh, right. Of course. I chew my bacon, trying to look nonchalant, but inside, I want to cheer. This new life of mine gets better and better. I'm an important member of the senior management team. Simon Johnson knows who I am.
We agreed it would be helpful for you to visit the office.
Eric is continuing.
It might help bring back your memory, as well as giving reassurance to your department.
I think it's a great idea, I say with enthusiasm. I could get to know my new job, see all the girls, we could have lunch.
Your deputy is standing in for you at the moment, says Eric, consulting a notepad on the kitchen counter. Byron Foster. Just till you return, obviously.
Byron's my deputy now, I say incredulously. But Byron used to be my boss. Everything's upside down. Everything's unrecognisable. I can't wait to get to the office and see what's been going on. Eric taps something into his BlackBerry, then puts it away and picks up his briefcase.
Have a good day, darling.
You too, darling. I stand up as he turns to face me, and there's a sudden frisson between us. Eric's standing only inches away from me. I can just smell his aftershave and see a little nick on his neck where he cut himself shaving. I haven't read the whole manual yet. I suddenly feel awkward. Would I normally kiss you goodbye at this point?
You normally would, yes.
Eric sounds stiff too.
But please, don't feel you.
No, I want to. I mean, we should do everything just like we usually do. I'm getting a bit pink in the face here. So, would I kiss you on the cheek or the lips?
The lips.
Eric clears his throat.
That would be the usual.
Right, I nod. So, I reach out for his waist, trying to appear natural. Like this? Tell me if it's not the way I normally do it.
Probably just one hand, says Eric after a moment's thought, and it's usually a bit higher up.
Okay. I shift one hand up to his shoulder and drop the other down, feeling as if I'm ballroom dancing. Then, keeping in position as best I can, I tilt my face upwards. Eric has a strange little nodule on the end of his tongue, I suddenly notice. Okay. I won't look at it. Concentrate on the kiss. He leans forward and his mouth brushes briefly against mine and I feel nothing. I was hoping our first kiss would trigger all sorts of memories or sensations. Maybe a sudden image of Paris or our wedding or our first snog. But as he draws away, I feel totally 100% blank. I can see the anticipation in Eric's face and quickly search for something encouraging to say. That was lovely. Very...
I trail off, unable to think of a single word other than quick, which I'm not sure hits the right note.
It didn't bring back any memories.
Eric is studying my face. Well, no, I say apologetically. But, I mean, that doesn't mean it wasn't really... I mean, it was. I feel quite turned on.
The words come out before I can stop them.
What the hell did I say that for? I don't feel turned on.
Really?
Eric lights up and he puts his briefcase down.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. I can't possibly have sex with Eric yet. Number one, I don't even know him, hardly. Number two, I haven't read what happens after gentle stimulation of the inner thighs. Not that turned on, I amend hastily.
I mean, just enough to realise... Well, I mean, obviously we have a great... When it comes to the bedroom, arena...
Stop talking, Lexi, now.
Anyway, I smile as brightly as I can manage. Have a great day.
You too.
Eric touches my cheek gently, then turns and strides off. I hear the door close and subside into a chair. That was a bit close. I reach for the marriage manual and quickly flick to the F section. I need to read up on foreplay. Not to mention fellatio, I suddenly notice. And frequency. Sexual. This could take me a while. 2 hours and 3 cups of coffee later, I close the manual and lean back, my head bursting with information. I've read it cover to cover, and I've pretty much got the whole picture. I've learned that Eric and I often spend weekends away at luxury boutique hotels. I've learned that we enjoy watching business documentaries and The West Wing, and we had differing views on Brokeback Mountain, which I've also learned was a film about gay cowboys. Gay cowboys! I've learned that Eric and I share a love of wine from the Bordeaux region. I've learned that I'm driven and focused and work 24/7 to get the job done. I've learned I don't suffer fools gladly, despise time wasters, and am someone who appreciates the finer things in life. Which is kind of news to me. I get up and walk to the window, trying to digest everything I've read. The more I learn about 28-year-old Lexi, the more I feel like she's a different person from me. She doesn't just look different. She is different. She's a boss. She wears beige designer clothes and La Perla underwear. She knows about wine. She never eats bread. She's a grown-up. That's what she is. I gaze into the mirror and my 28-year-old face stares back. How on earth did I get from me to her? On sudden impulse, I get up and head into the bedroom, then through into the clothes room. There have to be some clues somewhere. I sit down at my smart, minimalist dressing table and regard it silently. I mean, look at this, for a start. My old dressing table was painted pink in a total mess. All scarves, necklaces looped over the mirror, and pots of makeup everywhere. But this is immaculate. Silver pots in rows, a single dish containing one pair of earrings, and an Art Deco hand mirror. I open a drawer at random and find a pile of neatly folded scarves, on top of which is a shiny DVD marked Ambition, EP1, in felt tip. I pick it up, puzzled, then suddenly realise what it is. It's that programme Amy was talking about. This is me on the telly. Oh my God, I have to see this. First, because I'm dying to know what I looked like, and second, because it's another piece of the puzzle. This reality show is where Eric first saw me. It gave me my big break at work. I probably had no idea at the time how crucial it was going to be. I hurry into the living room, eventually manage to locate the DVD player behind a translucent panel, and slot it in. Soon the programme titles are rolling on all the wall-mounted screens throughout the flat.
I fast forward until my face appears on screen, then press play. I'm all prepared to cringe with embarrassment and duck behind the sofa. But actually, I don't look that bad. My teeth have already been veneered or capped or whatever, although my mouth looks much thinner than it does now. I have definitely had collagen implants. My chestnut hair's been blow-dried and tied back in a ponytail. I'm wearing a black suit and an aquamarine shirt, and I look totally businesslike. I need to succeed, I'm saying to an off-camera interviewer. I need to win this. Blimey, I look so serious. I don't understand it. Why did I suddenly want to win a reality business show?
Good morning, Lexi.
A voice makes me jump out of my skin. I jab it stop on the remote and turn round to see a woman in her 50s. She has dark, grey-streaked hair tied back, a flowery overall, and is holding a plastic bucket full of cleaning things. An iPod is clipped to her overall pocket, and from the earphones in her ears I can just hear the strains of opera.
You're up,
she says in a piercing voice.
How are you feeling? Any better today?
Her accent is hard to place, kind of Cockney mixed with Italian. Are you Gianna? I say cautiously.
Oh, my Lord in heaven!
She crosses herself and kisses her fingers.
Eric warned me. You're not right in the head, poor girl.
I'm fine, really, I say hurriedly. I've just lost a bit of memory, so I'm having to learn everything about my life again.
Well, I am Gianna.
She hits her chest. Great. Thanks. I stand aside as Gianna moves past me and starts flicking over the glass surface of the coffee table with a feather duster, humming along to the iPod.
Watching your TV show, are you?
She says, glancing past me at the huge screen. Oh, I was... just to remind myself. I hastily turn it off. Meanwhile, Gianna has started polishing a display of photo frames. I twist my fingers awkwardly. How can I just stand here watching another woman clean my house? Should I offer to help?
What would you like me to cook for dinner tonight?
She says, starting to plump up the cushions on the sofa. Oh, I say, looking up in horror. Nothing, really. I know Eric and I are all rich and everything, but I can't ask someone else to cook my supper. It's obscene.
Nothing?
She pauses.
Are you going out?
No, I just thought maybe I'd do the cooking myself tonight.
Oh, I see, she says. Well, it's up to you.
Her face set, she picks up a cushion and bangs it out with more vigour.
I hope you enjoyed the soup last night,
she adds, without looking at me. It was delicious, I say hastily. Thanks, lovely flavours.
Good, she says in a stiff voice. I do my best.
Oh, God, she isn't offended, is she?
Let me know what you'd like me to buy for you to cook,
she continues, slapping the cushion down.
If you're after something new or different.
Shit, she is offended.
Oh, well...
My voice is scratchy with nerves.
Actually, on second thoughts, maybe you could make a little something. But, I mean, don't make any effort. Just a sandwich would be fine. A sandwich?
She raises her head incredulously.
For your dinner? Or whatever you like. Whatever you enjoy cooking.
Even as I say the words, I know how stupid this sounds. I back away, pick up a property magazine which is lying on a side table, and open it at a piece about water features. How am I ever going to get used to all this? How did I turn into someone with a housekeeper, for God's sake?
Ah! The sofa has been damaged!
Gianna's voice suddenly sounds far more Italian than Cockney. She yanks her iPod earphones out of her ears and gestures at the torn fabric in horror.
Look! Ripped! Yesterday morning it was perfect.
She looks at me defensively.
I tell you, I left it in good condition. No rips, no marks.
The blood rushes to my head. That was me, I stammer. I did it.
You?
It was a mistake, I gabble. I didn't mean to. I broke this glass leopard and... I'm breathing hard. I'll order another sofa cover, I promise. But please don't tell Eric. He doesn't know.
He doesn't know?
Jana seems bewildered. I put the cushion over the rip, I swallow, to hide it. Jana stares at me for a few disbelieving moments. I stare back pleadingly, unable to breathe. Then her severe face creases into a laugh. She puts down the cushion she's holding and pats me on the arm.
I'll sew it. Little tiny stitches. You'll never know.
Really? I feel a wash of relief.
Oh, thank God. That would be wonderful. I'd be so grateful.
Jana is surveying me with a perplexed frown, her broad arms folded across her chest.
You're sure nothing happened when you bumped your head, she says at last, like personality transplant.
What? I give an uncertain laugh. I don't think so. The door buzzer goes.
Oh, I'd better get this.
I hurry to the front door and lift the entry phone. Hello?
Hello?
Comes a guttural voice.
Car delivery for Gardner.
My new car is parked in a place at the front of the building, which, according to the porter, is my own private spot. It's a silver Mercedes, I can tell from the badge thing on the front, and it's a convertible. Apart from that, I couldn't tell you much about it, except I'm guessing it cost a fortune.
Sign here, and here.
The car delivery man is holding out a clipboard. Okay, I scribble on the paper.
Here's your keys, tax disc, all your paperwork. Cheers, love.
The guy retrieves his pen from my hand and heads out of the gates, leaving me alone with the car, a bundle of papers, and a set of shiny car keys. I dangle them in my fingers, feeling a frisson of excitement. I've never been a car person, but then I've never been this close to a glossy, brand-new Mercedes before. A brand-new Mercedes, which is all mine! Maybe I'll just check it over inside. In an instinctive gesture, I hold out the key fob and press the little button, then jump as the car bleeps and all the lights flash on. Well, I've obviously done that before. I open the door, slide into the driver's seat, and inhale deeply. Wow. Now, this is a car. This knocks Loser Dave's crappy Renault out of the park. It has the most wonderful, intoxicating scent of new leather. The seats are wide and comfortable. The dashboard is gleaming wood veneer. Cautiously, I place my hands on the steering wheel. They seem to grip it quite naturally. In fact, they seem to belong there. I don't really want to take them off. I sit there for a few moments, watching the entry gates rise and fall as a BMW drives out. The thing is, I can drive. At some stage, I must have passed my test, even if I don't remember doing it. And this is such a cool car. It would be a shame not to have a go. Experimentally, I push the key into the slot beside the steering wheel, and it fits. I rotate it forward, like I've seen people do, and there's a kind of roar of protest from the engine. Shit! What did I do? I turn it forward again, more cautiously, and this time there's no roar, but a few lights pop on around the dashboard. Now what? I survey the controls hopefully for inspiration, but none comes. I have no idea how to work this thing, is the truth. I have no memory of driving a car in my life. But the point is, I have done it. It's like walking in heels. It's a skill which is locked away inside me. What I need is to let my body take over. If I can just distract myself enough, then maybe I'll find myself driving automatically. I place my hands firmly on the steering wheel. Here we go. Think about other things. La la la, don't think about driving, just let your body do what comes naturally. Maybe I should sing a song, that worked before. Land of hope and glory, I begin tunelessly. Mother of the free. Oh my God, it's working! My hands and feet are moving in sync. I don't dare look at them. I don't dare register what they're doing. All I know is I've switched on the engine and pushed down on one of the pedals and there's a kind of rumbling and... I did it! I switched on the car! I can hear the engine throbbing as if it wants to get going. Okay, keep calm. I take a deep breath. But deep inside, I'm already a bit panicky. I'm sitting at the controls of a Mercedes and the engine's running, and I'm not even sure how that happened. Right. Collect yourself, Lexi. Handbrake. I know what that is. And the gear stick. Cautiously, I release both, and at once the car moves forward. Hastily, I press my foot down on one of the pedals to stop it, and the car bucks with an ominous grinding noise. Shit, that didn't sound good. I release my foot and the car creeps forward again. I'm not sure I want it doing that. Trying to stay calm, I press my foot down again, hard. But this time, it doesn't even stop, just keeps going inexorably forward. I thrust again, and it revs up like a racing car. Shit, I say, almost gibbering in fear. Okay, just stop. Stay. I'm pulling back on the wheel, but it's making no difference. I don't know how to control this thing. We're slowly heading towards an expensive-looking sports car parked opposite, and I don't know how to stop. In desperation, I thrust both feet down again, hitting two pedals at once with a shrieking engine-braking sound. Oh, God! Oh, God! My face is hot. My hands are sweating. I should never have got into this car. If I crash it, Eric will divorce me, and I won't blame him. Stop! I cry again. Suddenly, I notice a dark-haired man in jeans coming through the gates. He sees me gliding forward towards the sports car, and his whole face jolts. Stop! He yells, his voice faint through the window. I can't stop! I yell back desperately. Steer! He mimes turning the steering wheel. The steering wheel? Of course! I'm a moron! I wrench it round to the right, nearly dragging my arms out of my sockets, and manage to turn the car off course. Only now I'm heading straight towards a brick wall. Brick! The guy is running alongside me. Brick, Lexi! But I don't... For God's sake, brick! He yells. The handbrake, I suddenly remember. Quick! I yank it back with both hands and the car stops with a judder. The engine is still running, but at least the car is stationary. And at least I haven't hit anything. My breaths are coming fast and hoarse. My hands are still clenched round the handbrake. I'm never driving again. Never. Are you okay? The guy's at my window. After a few moments, I manage to unclench one of my hands from the handbrake. I jab randomly at the buttons on the car door until the window winds down. What happened?
I panicked. I can't actually drive a car. I thought I'd remember how to, but I had a bit of a panic attack.
Suddenly, with no warning, I feel a tear running down my face.
I'm sorry.
I gulp.
I'm a bit freaked out. I've had amnesia, you see.
I look up to see the guy just staring at me as if I'm talking a foreign language. He's got a pretty striking face, now I come to notice it.
High cheekbones, dark grey eyes and slanted eyebrows gathered in a frown, with dark brown untidy hair. He's wearing a plain grey T-shirt over his jeans, and he looks a bit older than me. Maybe early 30s? He also seems totally dumbfounded. Which I guess is not surprising, bearing in mind he's just come into a car park, minding his own business, to find a girl crashing a car and saying she has amnesia. Maybe he doesn't believe me, I think in sudden alarm. Maybe he thinks I'm drink driving and this is all some invented excuse. I was in a car crash a few days ago, I explain hurriedly. I really was. I hit my head. Look. I point to the remaining cuts on my face.
I know you were in a car crash,
he says at last. He has a very distinctive voice, dry and kind of intense, as though every word he speaks really, really matters.
I heard about it.
Wait a minute. I click my tongue, suddenly realising. You called out my name. Do we know each other? A jolt of shock passes over the guy's face. I can see his eye studying me almost as though he doesn't believe me, as though he's searching for something.
You don't remember me,
he says at last. No, I say with an apologetic shrug. I'm sorry, I'm not being rude. I don't remember anyone I've met in the last 3 years. My friends, my husband even. He was a total stranger to me. My own husband. Can you believe it? I smile. But the guy doesn't smile back or express sympathy. In fact, his expression almost makes me nervous.
Do you want me to park that for you?
He says abruptly. Oh, yes, please. I glance anxiously at my left hand, still clutching the handbrake. Can I let go of this? Will the car roll away? A tiny smile flickers over his face.
No, it won't roll away. You can let go.
Cautiously, I unfurl my hand, which had practically seized up, and shake out the stiffness. Thanks so much, I say, getting out. This is my brand new car. If I'd crashed it, I can't even think. I wince at the idea. My husband got it for me to replace the other one. Do you know him? Eric Gardiner?
Yes,
he says after a pause.
I know him.
He gets into the car, shuts the door, and signals to me to get out of the way. The next moment, he's expertly reversed the car safely back into its parking spot. Thanks, I say fervently as he gets out. I really appreciate it. I wait for the guy to say, it's no trouble, or any time, but he seems lost in thought.
What did they say about the amnesia?
He says, suddenly looking up.
Have your memories gone forever?
They might come back any time, I explain, or they might not. No one knows. I'm just trying to learn about my life again. Eric's being really helpful in teaching me all about our marriage and everything. He's the most perfect husband. I smile again, attempting to lighten the atmosphere. So, where do you fit into the picture? There's no response at all from the dark-haired guy. He's shoved his hands in his pockets and is staring up at the sky.
I really don't know what his problem is.
At last, he lowers his head and surveys me again, his face all screwed up as though he's in pain. Maybe he is. Maybe he has a headache or something.
I have to go,
he says. All right. Well, thanks again, I say politely. And very nice to meet you. I mean, I know we've met before in my previous life, but you know what I mean. I hold out a hand to shake his, but he just looks at it as though it makes no sense to him at all.
Bye, Lexi.
He turns on his heel. Bye, I call after him, then trail off. What a weird guy. He never even told me his name. 9.
Fee is one of the most straightforward people I know. We met at the age of 6, when I was the new girl in the school playground. She was already a head taller than me, her dark hair in bunches, her voice booming and confident. She told me my plastic skipping rope was rubbish, and loudly listed all its faults. Then, just as I was about to start crying, she offered me hers to play with. That's Fee. She can upset people with her bluntness, and she knows it. When she said the wrong thing, she rolls her eyes and claps her hand over her mouth. But underneath it all, she's warm-hearted and kind. And she's great in meetings. When other people waffle on, she gets right to the point, no bullshit. It was Fee who gave me the idea of applying to Della Carpets. She'd been working there for 2 years when Frenshaw's, the company I was at before, got taken over by a Spanish company and a bunch of us took voluntary redundancy. There was an opening in the flooring department and Fee suggested I bring my CV in to show Gavin, her boss. And that was it. I had a job. Since working together, Fee and I have become even closer. We have lunch together, we go to the cinema at the weekend, we send text messages to each other while Gavin is trying to give one of his team bollockings, as he calls them. I'm close to Carolyn and Debs too, but Fee's the one I ring up first with news, the one I think of when something funny happens. Which is why it's so weird that she hasn't been in touch. I've texted her several more times since I got out of hospital. I've left 2 messages on voicemail. I've sent a few jokey emails and even written a card thanking her for the flowers. But I haven't heard a word back. Maybe she's just busy, I keep telling myself. Or she's been on some work residential seminar thing, or she's got the flu. There's a million good reasons. Anyway, I'm going into work today, so I'll see her. And everyone. I stare at myself in the huge mirror in my dressing room. 2004 Lexi used to pitch up at the office in a pair of black trousers from Next, a shirt from the bargain bin at New Look, and a pair of loafers with chewed-up heels. Not anymore. I'm in the crispest shirt I've ever worn in my life, all expensive Prada double cuffs. I'm wearing a black suit with a pencil skirt and a nipped-in waist. My legs are gleaming in Sharnos sheer gloss tights. My shoes are patent and spiky. My hair is blow-dried and twisted up into my signature chignon. I look like an illustration from a child's picture book. Boss lady. Eric comes into the room and I do a twirl. How do I look? Great. He nods, but doesn't seem surprised at my appearance. I suppose to him this kind of outfit is normal, whereas I can't imagine this ever feeling like anything other than dressing up. All set. I guess. I pick up my bag, a black Bottega Veneta tote which I found in the cupboard. I tried asking Eric about Fee yesterday, but he barely seemed to know who she was, even though she's my oldest friend and was at our wedding and everything. The only friend of mine he seems to know about is Rosalie, which is because she's married to Clive. Anyway, it's fine. I'll see Fee today, and there'll be some explanation, and everything will fall back into place. I expect we'll all go out for a drink at lunchtime and have a good old catch-up.
Now, don't forget this.
Eric is opening a cupboard in the corner. He retrieves a sleek black briefcase and hands it to me.
I gave it to you when we were married.
Wow, this is beautiful. It's made of buttery soft calfskin and on the front are discreetly embossed initials LG.
I know you still use your maiden name for work, says Eric, but I wanted you to take a little piece of me to the office with you every day.
He is so romantic. He is so perfect.
I must go. The car will be here to pick you up in 5 minutes. Have a good time.
He kisses me and heads out.
As I hear the front door close, I pick up my briefcase and look at it, wondering what to put in it. I've never used a briefcase before. I always just shoved everything into my bag. Eventually, I take a packet of tissues and some polos out of my bag and put them into the briefcase. Then I add a pen. I feel like I'm packing for my first day at a new school. As I'm sliding the pen into a silk pocket, my fingers bump against something thin, like a card, and I pull it out. It's not a card. It's an old photo of me, Fee, Debs and Carolyn. Before I had my hair done. When my teeth were all still snaggly. We're in a bar, all dressed up in glittery tops with rosy cheeks and party popper streamers over our heads. Fee has her arm clenched round my neck, and I have a cocktail umbrella in my teeth, and we're all in hysterics. I can't help grinning at the sight. I remember that evening really well. Debs had chucked her awful banker boyfriend Mitchell, and we were on a mission to help her forget. Halfway through the evening, when Mitchell called Deb's mobile, Carolyn answered and pretended to be a £1,000 Russian call girl who thought she was being booked. Carolyn did Russian for A-level, so she was quite convincing, and Mitchell got genuinely rattled, whatever he claimed later. We were all listening on speakerphone, and I thought I'd die of laughter. Still smiling, I slide the photo back into the pocket and snap the briefcase shut. I pick it up and regard myself in the mirror. Boss lady goes to work. Hi, I say to my reflection, trying to adopt a businesslike tone. Hi there. Lexi Smart, director of flooring. Yep, hi. I'm the boss. Oh, God. I don't feel like a boss. Maybe I'll snap back into it when I get there.
This ends Disc 4.